Welcome to Out Your Way on the personality stations WJLS and WBKW. This is Bill O'Brien, your host, and it's my pleasure here for WJLS listeners to sing happy birthday to ourselves. Today is our 42nd anniversary of going on the air, and it's my pleasure also to introduce the guiding force behind this operation, Mr. Joel Smith, Jr. Mr. Smith, in 1939, 42 years ago, what were you thinking?
Well, 42 years ago, it was Sunday at 4:45. I was thinking then that in an hour and 15 minutes we'd sign off.
We signed on at noon and went off then at 6, huh?
On at noon and off at 6 on that first Sunday. We signed off at 6 o'clock. All sat down, took a deep breath. Said, my goodness, what a day. Then someone brought the brilliant idea that we had to have a program for tomorrow. So we had to spend the rest of the evening putting together the Monday program.
So you'd put all your efforts together for that first day and then had to hustle for the next day. Huh?
On Monday was quite a day, too. But we got through Monday and subsequent days thereafter.
What was the response to the initial broadcasts?
Oh, it was tremendous. We, back in those days, everything was live. And we started to announce the fact that in the newspaper we'd be on the air at noon, invited people to come see us. The streets were crowded, the staircases were crowded coming into the studio. We had more people than we knew what to do with.
Now, the studio was in the same location then.
We haven't moved a thing since 1939. Had to stop and think. But that was quite a day that Sunday.
You've shown me some of the telegrams from
all
over the place.
Oh, telegrams from all over the place. We were really a big-time operator, 100 watts on 1,210 kilocycles.
Why did we move? We're now at 560 and 5,000 watts.
Well, we moved from 1,210 to 1,240 in the first commission changes. I think WCAU in Philadelphia is now on 1,210. 1240 became the local frequency. But we couldn't do much good in the terrain with 100 watts on 1240, which was the local frequency. So we started looking around for another frequency that would do a better job in the hilly terrains. And AM radio waves have a pronounced effect that the longer the wavelength, the better it travels over the earth. Consequently, we wanted to be down the low end of the dial. We found 560 and applied for it. Came on initially with 250 watts on 560.
That was what year?
That was sometime after the war, 1946, after the World War II. I call that the war.
Yes.
And then to protect ourselves, well, we came on with 250 watts, I guess it was actually during the war years, with the promise to the commission that as soon as the war was over and equipment became available, we'd go to 1,000 watts. So that was in 1946, I believe we went to 1,000 watts. Operated there with 1,000 for a bit, and then felt that in order to protect the frequency as much as anything else from other interlopers who might want to get on 560, it would be advisable for us to request and ask for the maximum power permittable on 560, which happens to be 5,000 watts, which we are now.
Why did you go into this business? It's obviously you were a pioneer in the business, and you, as I understand it, are the single man who has operated a broadcast facility longer than anybody else in the state. Mm-hmm. That's quite a record.
Yeah, that's quite a record. Well, I got into the business back about 1936 or 1937, a radio engineer came through Beckley. He was a consultant, very nice chap, and dropped in on the Chamber of Commerce and said, thought Beckley would be a good place to put a radio station. If they know anyone around here who might be interested in a radio station. I happened to be a ham radio operator at the time, and the only person they could think of was me. I still am, yes. And so they referred him to me. We got together and filed the application with the commission for the 100 watts on 1210. It was set as everything was in those days for hearing, because they were afraid that we would interfere with stations in, I think, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and some other places around, who also appeared in opposition to our coming on the air at 1210 with 100 watts in Beckley. We had the hearing in Washington, I recall very well. And believe it or not, the examiner recommended to the commission that the application be denied because, in his word, I was a mere youth of 21. God, I can't believe that. Mere youth of 21 and shouldn't be entrusted with a broadcast station to serve such an important area. Got a new attorney and went back and argued the thing before the commission again. This time the attorney pointed out that at 21 I was of legal age and they couldn't deny it, so they granted the application. And we came back and started to put the station on the air. We built our own transmitter and most of our equipment. Now, well recall, I presume one of the few times that FCC commissioner came to visit us was during the construction period. I was sitting up in the front office there on the floor unpacking the console we had bought. And I looked up and here's a fellow standing up there. He said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm cleaning up here, getting ready to put a radio station on the air." He said, "Well, I'm Irvin Stewart." He said, "I'm a commissioner from the FCC." Well, Mrs. Stewart, Dr. Stewart, became president of the University of West Virginia in time, as you know. To my knowledge, that's the only time I've known of a commissioner coming in and help put a radio station.
I was going to say, that's highly unusual for a commissioner to make an in-person visit to any facility.
Well, he was West Virginian, so it didn't make much difference. Incidentally, one of the first of the radio commissioners was a West Virginian, Judge Robinson.
We've broken some ground in other areas. For example, in looking back through the archives in 1943, we became affiliated with the CBS network, and the way I understand it, we were the smallest market to be a part of the network at that time. How did you land that? That's quite a coup.
Well, I didn't actually land that. That was landed by the manager we had here at the time, because in 1943 I was doing my duty overseas. Mm-hmm. But he became friendly with some people in New York and was able to convince them that they needed an affiliate down here in this area. The area was not covered by CBS. And so they took us on. We were basically not compensated. And in those days, the national advertiser would pick out the various stations on the network that he would want to use. It wasn't a question of them buying the entire network. They'd pick out 10, 15, 20, or 30 stations that they wanted. And so we had to constantly try to sell the station to the national advertiser to be included on the network, from which we got very little compensation. But we joined with CBS and made a big difference.
Let's talk about local programming for a moment. Over 42 years, I'm sure you've had some of your favorite personalities as well as programs. And this is a big question, but just skimming over your mind for 42 years, what comes to mind?
Well, I've started thinking about people who've been through here in the last 42 years. Why, there are so many of them. I can count them in the hundreds, I guess, or near the thousands, because there's...
Yeah, we didn't have that big a turnover, Nick.
Well, actually, best say in 46, the staff of the radio station was considerably larger than it is now. In 1946, back in the days when the regulations so required it, we had to have a first-class operator on duty at the transmitter at all times. There was four people. In 46, we also had control room operators who did no announcing, merely spun the disc and rode level on the programs. And we had to have the announcers, and we had special events people, and we had sports commentators and what have you. So at one time there, the staff was running in the neighborhood of 30 and 35. So it wasn't quite as automated as it is today. But during those 40 years, we've had many people through here. Lots of them have gone on to bigger and better things.
a lot of major market material.
Oh, yes. Yes. We had some major market material in here and went on to major market. Of course, we had Julie and Judy, you know, down Grand Ole Opry, and little Jimmy Dickens. He's
still well known.
Yes, still well known. And Enzo Alessandrini, he went up to Chicago, I believe it was. Came Larry Alexander, he was quite well known on the network. And big Johnny Gersh, John Gersh. John became, John in a kiddie show on ABC, I've forgotten now. Oh. What was the name of that show? Anyhow, it was quite popular.
So he made the network then.
Made the network, and then one of our salesmen became an investor in a TV station. Became quite prosperous that way. We've had others through here too. I could just hesitate to think of those that have been here and gone on, done well, and of course that was the idea.
Sort of an unfair question to do that, but let me ask another one, and let's go into programs. Mm-hmm. For example, you had a Home of Tomorrow promotion back, in the 40s, I guess, and other
40s.
Special events like that.
Yeah, we also had goldfish, eating goldfish live. Remember that? We had ballyhooed that. Johnny Gersh, incidentally, was the one that did it. Finally volunteered for the job. He stood in the window there facing Main Street. And at the appropriate time, I think it was 9 o'clock that evening or 7 o'clock that evening, he ate a goldfish before the audience, and we promptly broadcast every bit of it, you know. Everything was word by word. The home of today, which we built as a promotional effort, is still over on Woodlawn Avenue. It was done as a joint deal between ourselves. We were buying the materials at a wholesaler's cost, so to speak, given the balance of their retail value in advertising and supplying our own labor. So we put together the Home of Tomorrow and had, it was Woodrum from Charleston came down and decorated it for us, and we ballyhooed the thing around considerably, and eventually did such a good job that that year Billboard gave us the top award in the nation for exploitation. So we won a national award with that.
Using exploitation in a positive
way. Yeah, in a positive way, exploiting the promotion, I guess you might say.
Well, you've been an originator of special programming, sports events for decades. We follow the Beckley team, still do, various other promotions. Have you seen radio change since the beginning, and what do you envision for the future? Again, two very wide-ranging questions here.
Well, of course, radio has become much more of an information media than it ever was. When we started in 40 and 39, of course, we were attempting to be all things to all people with agricultural programs and hog markets and cow markets, whatever it might be, market prices, and entertainment, which was off of 78 RPM discs and sounded like it might be playing from an old-time phonograph. It was, really. But today, as you know, we spend a lot of time with our news, and we have a remote units out covering the various activities as they occur. We have excellent news from CBS, and they have their net alert, which breaks in for anything that might occur that instantaneously. So we're pretty well covered from the information. But I just say again, we're more of an information medium right now than we were back in the days when we attempted to be entertainment, and we were entertainment then. There was no TV to worry about. And we looked forward to the evenings for our Lux Radio Theaters and our Jack Benny's and the rest of those old-time radio shows. Daytime, we were all stuffed up with the Romance of Helen Trench,
and
the rest of those.
And we still have Well, until recently, people like Art Linkletter and Arthur Godfrey
in
the last decade, why, they were still popular.
Still popular, because that's grown older, that's all, like the rest of it.
So what about the future? What do you see for that?
Future, I see only good things for radio as such. There's a lot of talk about stereo AM, as there is, of course, there is now stereo FM, and talking about quadraphonic FM. But whether or not we want to go that direction is questionable. Our experience with stereo on FM hasn't been too good because of the terrain around here. It's too chopped up. But the possibility of stereo AM. And I think we will go more and more towards a specialized type of operation. We probably get away from some of the things we're even doing today and specialize in the type of coverage that may seem more important to us and to the, we hope, the largest segment of the audience.
Obviously, that's what a radio station is all about. We are entrusted to the public. The airwaves allegedly belong to the public, and that is how we obtained our license, and that's how we keep it, and to serve the audience.
Yeah, that's PICON, Public Interest, Convenience, or Necessity, PICON. Of course, when we were granted the license, we were one of 900 stations in the United States, 10th station in the state. Today, I understand there are 8,000 radio
stations. At least, yes.
And I don't know how many in West Virginia, 50, 60, something like that. So the necessity for us being all things to all listeners is not as important as it was back in the 1940s. We feel that there are enough radio stations on the air that each can be something important to each listener, that the responsibility of covering the spectrum can and will be divided because of all 8,000 radio stations broadcast the same thing. It's going to be a very segmented audience.
Yes. Well, Mr. Smith, we appreciate your efforts. It took a lot of courage 42 years ago to go into unexplored territories in a market the size of Beckley. At that time, I would say that Beckley's population was 12, 14,000 maybe?
Now, 40's population, something like that. 9,000, I believe.
Okay, even less than that.
9,000. Of course, at that time, Raleigh County was quite larger population-wise than it is now.
Nevertheless, it took a little farsightedness to get something like this going.
Well, the biggest job we had was to convince the advertiser that radio would sell goods. What do you think we have?
I would say, yes. I thank you for being part of our celebration. I would sing happy birthday to you, but I don't think that would be appropriate if you've heard me sing. So.
Well, I have, and I thank you for it. I'm glad to be able to be here after so many years. I'm sitting in the same office I started in 1939, so I'm quite accustomed to this location.
Now, I hope you will continue to be there for a long time. I've been with you for the last 12 years, and I've enjoyed the association, and I thank you.
You see how time passes.
Yes, when you're having fun. Mr. Joel Smith has been our guest today on Out Your Way as we have an anniversary program. Thank you for tuning in. See you tomorrow. This is Bill O'Brien, hoping you have a copacetic day.